The NPP had 135 and the NDC had 136, which clearly meant that the NDC were a majority. But now, the Supreme Court has put all that beyond doubt for now, at least until the determination of the final matter. So, what do you make of this? Let's connect on these important matters. David Kratos is a lawyer. He's been following these issues. He has some very important views to share on this, and he's connecting with us in studio. David, it's good to have you connect and making your debut on the show.
Good evening.
Timothy Selikem Donko is connecting with us on Zoom. Timothy, it's good to have you connect with us on this matter. If you can unmute.
Yeah, good evening, and I'm most grateful for giving me this opportunity.
Edi Muhayudin is also a political communicator. He is really well known within the NPP circles and is connecting with us on this matter. Edi, it's good to have you connect with us. You have to unmute, Edi.
Hello?
Yes, it is good to have you. And then Julius Yao Petechi is a veteran parliamentary reporter. He reports for the Ghanaian Times and is connecting with us on phone. Julius, it's good to have you connect with us. Hello, Julius. Well, I'll get Julius pretty shortly on there. But let me start with you, David, in studio. David, where do you stand with that decision that was made by Aban Bagbin yesterday?
Well, good evening once again. So the decision by Aban Bagbin yesterday raised very interesting political developments. Very interesting times in this eighth parliament where we see a lot of drama happening. Ideally, I think the speaker was right to make the decision based on the precedent available to him, how the matter had been handled in the past, and what constitutionally was before him.
There are those who've made matters about natural justice and all those things. Don't you think those are important, and that, or you don't think they apply in this system?
Oh, well, indeed, yes, they do apply. They do apply. Indeed, you should have heard them out. But then I believe the speaker made copious references to the fact that a notice of poll was issued by the EC. And by that notice of poll, you could see that these members of parliament had either or had in one way or the other moved from their political allegiances towards another political allegiance, which a situation Article 97 of our Constitution does not allow or does not support, because Article 97 sees that as cross-carpeting. So immediately a member of parliament decides to move from the party he was elected to parliament on, or decides to become an independent candidate, then that person automatically vacates his seat by the provisions in the Constitution. As speaker and as person in charge of the parliamentary business, it was in his place to now institute what the constitutional provisions were saying. And so in the event of any disagreement with how the speaker applies the Constitution, then other avenues may be sought. Like we saw now, the Supreme Court has made a ruling on whether or not the seats should be vacated. The Supreme Court says the seats shouldn't be vacated, and that's where we stand now.
I mean, Edi Muhayudin, that is opinion of David here in studio, that, listen, the speaker, it appears to him, was right in the determination he made yesterday. Of course, we'll get into the Supreme Court decision later, but why do you also stand on that? Hello, Edi, can you unmute?
Yes, okay. Is it clear now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, so for me, the crux of this matter really border on constitutional interpretation. And if you like, because clearly what the speaker sought to do was to clearly interpret the constitution. Because you and I know very well that when it comes to the matters that the speaker, both parties were raising, if you like, were giving rival means for constitutional provisions. The decisions of the court, as party are proposing, clearly when the rival means are placed on constitutional provision, then automatically that interpretation obviously can only be given by the Supreme Court and not the person before whom the issue is brought. So my contention really is that the speaker, what he had done was clearly to assume jurisdiction, which he does not have, to interpret Article 97. That is one issue, that is one leg I have seen. Then the other issue that I have difficulty with is clearly when you look at the provisions of Article 99, when it comes to making a determination as to, if you like, whether a member of parliament really is in parliament in accordance or vacates his seat, or whether really he's supposed to be in parliament, clearly that particular determination can only be done by the High Court.
I mean, so like
the wording of Article 99.
Great. I mean,
and it's not the preserve of the speaker.
Okay, yes, I can hear you. Please hold it there for me. I can hear you. Please hold it there for me. Selikem, where do you stand on that? He said what the speaker reported to have done yesterday was interpretation, which was not in his purview to do, but that of the Supreme Court. Do you agree?
Yeah, so I think there is a need to make some clarification and correct some erroneous assumptions or opinion with regards to that. Now, with the issue of interpretation of the Constitution, Article 130 deals with it. Now, the position of the law is that if any question of interpretation of the Constitution comes before any court, the proper court to make or to perform that function is the Supreme Court. It is never the position of the law that if rival meanings are placed before any administrative body or authority, it needs to stay its interpretation of the matter and refer to Supreme Court. That is not the position of the law. So you remember in the Saul matter, the rival meanings that were placed on Article 49 on what should probably be done when there is a new demarcation and all that. But the Electoral Commission went ahead with its own interpretation. Now, if you have a contrary meaning to what the Electoral Commission had adjudged the meaning of Article 49 to be, then you should proceed to the Supreme Court to challenge it. Or if that matter had come before a court other than the Supreme Court, then the court by 132B is required to refer the matter to Supreme Court. So it is never the position of the law that administrative bodies or quasi-constitutional bodies should stay interpretation or application of constitutional provisions whenever rival meanings are placed before it by.
It appears I have some challenge with the Zoom connection there. I'll fix it. Selikem Donko is making a point. Do I have Selikem Donko back? Selikem, can you hear me? Right, we'll fix the connection and bring Selikem back. But Julius, we've been hearing a lot of law around this table. You are the only layman around the panel now. Where do you start? I mean, yeah, you've been reporting from Parliament. You were there when Speaker Okwe said that precedent in 2020. Bagbin did not rely on that. He did say that it wasn't binding on him, but went ahead to give a ruling that was literally almost the same. I mean, where do you stand?
Kuku, good evening to you and then to listeners around the globe. Thanks for having me, and then good evening to all the colleagues on the panel. I think first and foremost, we have to understand how Parliament operates. You know, Parliament operates with what we see, or we have always said to be precedent and convention. So in 2020, the New Patriotic Party petitioned the Speaker of Parliament, the Right Honorable Aaron Michael Kwee, as he was at the time, that one of their own has left the party to contest as an independent candidate. And that on the basis of that, on the basis of that decision by the then member of parliament for Mina to leave the NPP to contest as an independent, and the speaker declared his seat taken. So let's ask ourselves, on what ground was the seat declared vacant? Because the NPP said the MP at the time had left the party. So let's look at the NPP's constitution itself. The constitution says once you contest as an independent candidate against the established political party, you have forfeited your membership. It's straightforward. The MP constitution is straightforward. Once you have left the party, you don't have any protection by the party anymore. So on those on that ground, Speaker Okwe declared the seat for if anybody is out, let me read to you a portion of what Speaker Okwe said in November. This is what he said. And I quote, with all intent and purposes, he, that is the honorable member of Mina, is no longer member of the party. He has pronounced himself publicly as an independent and has filed his papers to contest against the party as an independent candidate on December 2020. He continues, having forfeited the membership of the NPP, how did he do that? Did he go and tell the party that I am no more a member? No. But by the virtue of just contesting as an independent candidate, he has forfeited his member. He continues. The right honor about Abambadi, sorry, I could quick on. Having forfeited the membership of the party, other entities, on whose ticket he was elected to parliament, the operative language of the question is that he shall, which is mandatory, vacate his seat in parliament.
So, Julius, we have a little bit challenge with your network. It keeps breaking it and all that. But we heard the substance of your point. Please position yourself well. I'll come back to you again. Edie, you hear Julius make this point, citing the precedent that was set by Michael Quay in 2020. Was Michael Quay doing interpretation when he did that? And how do you say that Bagbin was then doing interpretation when they were simply doing the same thing, literally trying to apply the dictates of the Constitution? Because if we were to hold that what they did was an interpretation of the Constitution, wouldn't every person trying to apply the Constitution be purporting to interpret what the Constitution mean and then, based on that, acting on it? Hello, Idi Muhaidin, can you unmute?
Hello, okay. I want us to appreciate the thin line between interpretation and application of the Constitution. You see, when the constitutional provision is so clear and no interpretative issue arises, that is, no rival meaning is placed on it. Everybody is entitled to apply it. Everybody is entitled to apply it. Once nobody has raised an issue with it, so long as it is clear, but immediately an issue of if like rival meaning is placed on it. You remember the decision in Richard Annan? Even the word complaint, just the word complaint alone, because the parties had placed rival meanings on it. The Supreme Court, Judge Nawood, held that complaint was ambiguous. Why? Because rival meanings were placed on it. So the position of the law is that where the provision is so clear and no rival meaning is placed on it, then an interpretative issue does not arise. Anybody can apply it. But in this particular instance, you have a situation where the majority is saying one thing, minority is saying another thing. Then automatically, Spaji Akosa, this is certain law. And I'm not sure any lawyer would debate this.
Edie, what would that mean for practical governance? Wouldn't that mean that whenever anybody raises an issue, all the other person will have to do is to raise what they call a rival meaning? And every time we have to go to the Supreme Court, we have to stop whatever we are doing in Parliament, saying the executive, or whatever everybody is doing, and go to the Supreme Court. Every time somebody raises what they say to be a rival meaning, then we have to go to the Supreme Court. Even when some provisions are just what it is.
So you deal with case by case issues. So the point I'm making is that in this particular instance, so of course, the person before whom these people are conflicting positions are made, we also have to exercise discretion. So if you are not sure of what exactly it is, then your forum is the stronghold. Because, my brother, if you don't do that, then I can tell you that the stronghold will have nothing to do in terms of its interpretative position. It can never be invoked. It just can never be invoked, because if contentions do not happen, people do not raise rival meanings on constitutional provision that will warrant the invocation of the Supreme Court jurisdiction, then the Supreme Court will never be called upon to interpret anything. That's just the point I'm making. But regarding the, maybe I want to address the bit about the NPP constitution. A lot of people say that they have automatically forfeited their membership. I have a different, if you like, understanding of the situation. I have worked closely with the party.
But doesn't the constitution specifically state that a person would have automatically?
It doesn't. Listen, the constitutions are supposed to be read as a whole, every legal text. Now, if you take the NPP constitution, you go to Article 39, it talks about forfeiture. Now, beyond Article 39, now you don't read Article 39 alone and apply. Now, you go to Article 3. Article 3.3 on rights of members. On rights of members, it says that no decision shall be taken until the member is also is given a fair hearing, until the member is heard. And that aside, when you go to Article 4.3.6, it says a member who breaches any provision of this constitution, if you have the NPP constitution, you can refer to Article 4.3.6. It says a member who breaches any provision in this constitution or whose activities undermine the party's constitution shall have a complaint lodged against him. Now, essentially, these provisions, what these provisions seek to achieve is to conform with the general principles of natural justice. So that when an issue is raised that Cynthia Morrison has breached the NPP constitution because she had declared intention to contest as independent, the party does not automatically assume or deem her as having left the party. She must be heard, because even she has breached the constitution, and the constitution says that a member who breaches any provision of the constitution shall have a complaint lodged against. So the point I'm making is that conversation, that talk about automatic forfeiture, we must hasten slowly. That's the reason why the Speaker of Parliament, and you also know that in the NPP constitution, the National Council of the party has the constitutional mandate to actually vary any provisions of the constitution.
Okay, I see the point you're making, and I think we would come there when we're about to tie that in with the Supreme Court. David, where do you stand on? Do you agree with the position that have been canvassed by Idi Mohaidi?
No, so I don't fully agree with Idi's position. So you see, he makes the point that there are rival meanings being placed, and once there are rival meanings being placed on the constitutional provision, then it is the Supreme Court which has to act. I do not agree fully with that statement, because anybody could put rival meanings on anything. And once there are rival meanings, it does not in any way prevent a person who has the authority to act on a matter. It does not prevent him from acting on that matter. Rather, what the Constitution has also done is, pursuant to Article 2, any individual who alleges something is unconstitutional may go to the Supreme Court for a declaration to that effect. So to the extent that the Speaker has before him two people placing rival meanings, does not mean that there truly to the Speaker is rival meanings to be given effect to. So the Speaker can decide that to him, this is not a matter of constitutional interpretation. It's a matter of applying the Constitution, which the Speaker did lay bare when he was giving his ruling, or he was informing Parliament of his decision. So once he was applying the Constitution, to that extent, we cannot fault him, or we cannot say that because of the mere existence of rival meanings as alleged by two different individuals, then all of a sudden the Speaker's hands are tied. Like you mentioned, for good governance, how would it be possible that whenever there are two rival meanings being placed on something, then all of a sudden it means that the body should not act again, we should hold on, anything should happen. Rather, in this case, as has happened, the Speaker gave his ruling. Now, anybody who was dissatisfied went to court, and now the court has also given its ruling, which ideally is how things should happen. It shouldn't be that just because one party says it means A and another party says it means B, then it means that we have a difficulty. Then to his second point on the forfeiture question, I believe in answering this question, we have to consider who is a member of parliament and what does it mean to vacate your seat as a member of parliament for leaving a certain political party. Now, he made reference to the MPP's constitution. I think on this matter, both the MPP's constitution and the NDC's constitution can offer us some guidance. The MPP's constitution seems to suggest that a member of parliament who runs against somebody else running on the party's ticket has automatically forfeited his membership of that party, of the MPP. So I think that's with Article 3 of the MPP's constitution. So I believe that automatically that puts the MPP MPs who have been deemed to have forfeited their seats in a more terrible position. As contrasted with the NDC, I think with the NDC, it's Article 8 of their constitution. Theirs doesn't seem to be an automatic situation. So then with that, then you make now that this person has forfeited, stepped away from the party to contest as an independent candidate, does that mean that in the sense of this parliament, this person has cross-carpeted? I believe that we have to answer those questions before we can even talk about whether or not there's any automatic forfeiture as a member of parliament or no automatic forfeiture.
Mm. Okay, so let's zoom right into the decision of the court. Selikem, I want to start from you on that. The Supreme Court did sit today, and you heard that Dafia Mekpo, Honorable Dafia Mekpo, MP for Saudi, raise questions about how the court purportedly dealt with this matter so fast and all the issues they raised. Those are some political issues. But in terms of this, still talking about the legalities, was the court right in going through the route of stay of execution? There are those who said that. What exactly was is the order staying? The execution, what order is the court staying? What's your view on that?
Yes, so I think I would answer this in two ways. First of all, there is the question of what really is the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court and what are the powers of the Supreme Court. When you come to our constitution, Article 130 gives the Supreme Court the power to enforce and interpret the constitution. I understand that the originating motion that occasioned the hearing of the action was by an enforcement and an interpretation action under Article 130. Now, assuming that to be the case, then the issue arises whether or not the Supreme Court has the authority to stay an order of Parliament by virtue of its originating jurisdiction being invoked. Now, the issue here is one. When you say a court is staying an order, first and foremost, the order must be an executory order. So an order that cannot be executed cannot be stayed, right? In administrative law, in common law, it is known that all administrative orders are non-executory. It means they take effect as and when they are made. Unlike administrative orders, judicial orders of courts are executed. So when you go to a high court and you get a civil judgment in your favor, as a judgment creditor, you are supposed to execute the order. You can execute the order by facias or all other means of executing orders. But administrative orders are non-executory. So when administrative orders are made, they take effect as and when made. So there is no way a court can stay an order made by an administrative body. That is one. The second issue is whether or not, even if it is possible that a court may stay an order, whether the Supreme Court has the power. Now, the powers of the Supreme Court, in line with the orders the Supreme Court can make, has been set out in the Constitution and by CI-16, which is the Supreme Court rules. Now, for our purpose, it is Article 1294 of the Constitution that is material. I read Article 1294. It says, for the purposes of hearing and determining a matter within its jurisdiction and amendment, execution or enforcement of a judgment, order made on any matter, and for purposes of any authority, expressly or necessary implication given to the Supreme Court, by this constitution or any other law, the Supreme Court shall have all the powers, authorities, jurisdiction vested in any court established by this constitution or any other law, right? So by virtue of Article 1294, Supreme Court has its own powers stated in the constitution and has all the powers of all other courts. Now, does any power or does any other court has a power to stay an administrative order of a court? No. What we know very well is that if a supervisory jurisdiction of a court is invoked, the court can either by a prohibitive order or a certiorari strike out that order. No court has the power to stay an administrative order of a court. So by virtue of the modus and the propriety of the procedure for which the Supreme Court made the decision itself is problematic. That is one. Now, on the second issue is whether or not, even if the Supreme Court has the power, and a stay order is the appropriate remedy. I have engaged a conversation, I think, even with Oliver before, on pre or what you call interlocutory orders that the Supreme Court can make in hearing cases. I have held the opinion that even the Supreme Court does not have the authority to make interlocutory orders, being injunction, to stop the functioning of any constitutional body pending determination of a case, right? And it is this reasoning that informed the court in 31st December case that when an action was brought in court by the MPP to stop the Rawlings government from celebrating the 31st December case, the court decided not to hear the injunction application, but rather to expedite the hearing of the substantive case. Now, it stems from the issue of what? The non-suitability of what? Interlocutory orders in dealing with constitutional cases. Because what you end up doing is that you forestall the process of governance by staying the functioning of a particular body whilst a case is being determined. Now, we know that the Supreme Court is very good at delaying cases. So imagine this case takes for 4 years. It means that the Supreme Court will succeed in staying Parliament from performing its function until the case is decided. So I disagree entirely with all interlocutory process that can be used in stopping any other body from performing its function pending the determination of any case before Supreme Court.
Right. I mean, let's do the law before then I'll come to you, Julius. Please bear with me. I'll come to you pretty shortly. Edie, do you agree with the premise of the argument that have been made forcefully by Selikem that the court's opinion today, the court's ruling today, have some questions mark around it?
I disagree. I completely disagree. What it is, my points of disagreement really very clear. Now, what the speaker has done, is it something that can be implemented? Because he had ruled that the four members of parliament have vacated their seats. And therefore, what it means is that when next parliament is meeting, the four members of parliament are supposed not to, if you like, make appearance in parliament. Essentially, that's what the speaker has ruled. And this is a grave, if you like, a constitutional breach that has occasioned the course of action that the majority leader took to the court. And you and I know that if anybody alleges Article 2 and Article 130, once you allege that an action that somebody has done is likely to breach any provisions of the Constitution, you can invoke the Supreme Court jurisdiction for a court to intervene. So essentially what has happened is that the originating motion, as he said, was to invoke the Supreme Court's decision to intervene and ensure that the constitutional breach does not happen. Now, the Supreme Court, hearing all the submissions, took the view that, what the speaker has done, because, I mean, when you read it in Article 99, it is not even in the purview of the speaker to make that determination, which he sought to do. And saying that he's basing that on Order 18 or something. You and I know that even the standing orders of parliament are subject to the judicial review of the courts. Standing orders of parliament, the Justice Abdullahi case has certainly, either to the position of the law, is that whatever parliament does was a closed book into four versus Attorney General, GBA versus Attorney General. That was the position of the law we all knew until Justice Abdullahi, when Yoli Kolenji, who gave the lead judgment, unanimous judgment of the court, said that in Ghana, we do not practice what we call a parliamentary supremacy as it pertains in the UK. In Ghana, we practice constitutional supremacy. And that's what Article 1-2 states that clearly, that the constitution is the fundamental law of the land. And any law, including the standing orders of parliament, that is found to be inconsistent with any provision of the constitution, shall to the extent of the inconsistency be void. So essentially, it is only the Supreme Court, of course, once we are talking about constitution, it is only the Supreme Court that had a mandate to safeguard or protect the constitution by interpreting it and enforcing it. So if what the speaker has said, which clearly was to determine that a seat has become vacant and which mandate he does not have, and also the Supreme Court also looked at the implication of the far-reaching implication of the speaker's ruling, which is that it would deny the constituents of these four constituents, apart from the issue of the natural justice, which is so germane, so fundamental that you can't compromise on. As a natural justice, it is a principle that no court in this world will compromise on.
Yeah, and in fact, the Chief Justice, I was in court, did particularly emphasize on that. At some point, the judges had to nudge the lawyer for Afenyo Makin to that. This is your strongest point. You need to really expatiate on that, make that point clear, and then we can make our decision. David, what do you stand?
Okay.
Idi, I'll let David make this point.
So okay. I think I agree to a large extent with Idi on the role of the Supreme Court here. The Supreme Court is the body which ultimately is charged with interpreting the Constitution. Now, where there is a matter which has been unconstitutional, it is the Supreme Court who is supposed to act. Now, in doing its constitutional mandate, it is important that the Supreme Court is able to make such interlocutory orders as are necessary for its effective determination of the matter before it. And in this instance, the Supreme Court has decided that its interlocutory power is going to be exercised along the lines of allowing these members of parliament to return to their seats. I think that the Supreme Court in acting only did what it was supposed to do. It only did what it was also constitutionally expected to do. I see, though, the argument that what the Supreme Court has done may look a bit sketchy, because indeed there are cases which have been in court for a while which have not been heard, but then this matter has suddenly been heard. But I think you'd also agree with me that this matter has raised very interesting political questions, the likes of which we've not seen before. We see that we are 2 months to election, and 2 months to election we are having a change in the dynamic in parliament. It's a very important issue which the Supreme Court has to step in. Now, Article 125 has put justice in the hands of the judiciary, and the judiciary acts for the people. So what the judiciary is simply doing is ensuring that the people's justice is protected. And the judiciary believes that it can do this by, first of all, holding the speaker's decision and allowing these people to return to their seats, and then finally making a determination as to whether or not there was a violation of Article 97. And so I think the court is well within its powers. I think the court is acting properly. I think the court is also standing up to its mandate to exercise its judicial review over anything that happens in the country, especially in relation to the Constitution.
Right. Julius, I'm going to give you the last word on this, but before that, let me hear from other Ghanaians who've been sending us messages. Your messages have been pouring in thick and fast. This one says, good evening. My name is Manfred in Accra. My question is, why were the independent candidates quiet when the argument was going on in Parliament? Did anyone stop them from sharing their views? Well, they were not in Parliament. But I don't even think that's the point about being heard. It's a formal hearing kind of a thing where you hear them and their reasons, then you can pass judgment on them. This one says, is the legislature truly independent as we read in the statute books? Is there any attempt to usurp the powers of the legislature? That's your point. This one is from Angela Inosu. He says, all that the NPP is interested in is breaking the eight. What happens if those who vote for them fall sick? And you use some words. This one says, hello, Kweku. I'm Sam Bannerman in the USA. It has taken the CJ and her team forever to rule on the LGBTQ cases, which is dear to majority of Ghanaians' heart. But with the ruling the Speaker of Parliament gave on independent MPs, she did not waste time to consult the court to give a ruling. That's what you say. Danso from Teshi says, so those saying that the party of which the MP belongs must first trigger the removal, who then will trigger the removal of the independent MP who is now crossing to the MPP? The constitution is meant to protect the interests of citizens but not the political party. I see, that's a very strong point. Bismarck says, our Supreme Court is now more political than the political parties. They are faster than the speed of light when it comes to cases brought to it by some group of people, or slower than the snail on others. This is not a court of justice, because justice is balanced and does not respect the views of all the other persons. Thank you very much for your messages. Julius, the last word on this is yours. Where do you stand on the court decision staying in the hands and really restoring the status quo?
Kuku, first and foremost, before we go to that one, I would want us to establish this, that I think our friends, the MPP, must give Ghana some of respect. Because, for example, if you say that the political party must be the one to initiate the process of the removal of the MPP. The question I want to ask is, if the MPP had an overwhelming majority, or even let's say 2, 3, 4 majority, more members in parliament, would they initiate this action? Yes, they will. Because they would have noticed that even if these seats are declared vacant, we would still hold majority in parliament. The law must not be practiced or must not be applied in a selective manner. It must be genuine. It must be real. It must flow naturally. I don't think that the party must apply to speaker instead and say, this our member has brought couplets before the seat is declared vacant. I don't think so. Once the person has stepped up and filed his papers to contest as an independent candidate, the person automatically obtains his membership of the party as the constitution of the MPP states. It's as simple as that. Secondly, are we trying to say that if the party never contest this decision, those members who are members of the MPP and members of parliament will remain as MPs and all that? I don't think that should be the case. I think what we should be focused on, let's go back to the constitution. So, I'm not a lawyer, and I would want us to look at this. I think what the MPP should be talking about is, if you read Article 7, 97H, 97H. For me, I think that the question of the constitution on 97G, 97.1, and for emphasis, I want to read this one so that we all.
Yeah, please do that and do so briefly.
Yes, I will. Just give me 1 minute. 97G says, a member of parliament shall vacate his seat if he leaves the party of which he was a member at the time of his election to parliament to join another political party. That's one section of 97G. The other party, or seek to remain in parliament as an independent member.
Yeah.
So 97G gives two scenarios. If you leave the party to join another party, I don't think the other, all the three members of parliament, how do you call it, the honorable member for Gomoa West, to whom an amendment joined another party, they haven't. I think it's what the MPP should be fighting. But for the stage, which says, if he was elected a member of parliament as an independent candidate and joined a political party, by the virtue of even contesting on the ticket of the MPP, the member of parliament for Komina, who is the second deputy speaker,
Joined the political party. I see, Julius, you have a lot of points to make there, but we have run out of time. Thank you very much. It's not easy to assemble these Avengers on the platform today. I really enjoyed David Kratos on his debut. Definitely, you're going to hear more of him on Ghana Connect. Oliver Fanyon, thank you for bringing us a very sharp guest. Thank you very much, David Kratos. Thank you, Julius Petechi. You just heard him there. Timothy Selikem Donko. It's also very difficult fishing that guy out. And then Idi Mohayudin is also brilliant to have heard from you.